Welcome to Tackling the NFL, the only NFL podcast that, like Ben Roethlisberger, is showing up to training camp in the best shape of our lives. I'm Josh Rosenberg, that's Adam Baltax, and we have a doozy of an episode for you today. There's a reason it is a week late, and it is because it took us a lot of time to put this one together, especially Adam. So what we are going to be doing today is an expansion draft, and with an expansion draft comes rules, because we wanted to make it as realistic as possible, because today, we're recording on Wednesday, is the same day that the Seattle Kraken will be drafting the newest expansion NHL team. So we thought, if we were drafting a new NFL team today, say the Mexico City Jaguares, what would that team look like? And so we are going to be telling you exactly which players we would pick. Adam, do you want to lay out the rules of the draft?
Sure. So we went to all 32 teams. I took 16 and Josh took 16. And we made five players available from each team. The rules for these players is that only one of these players can have 10 or more years of NFL experience. That makes it harder for teams like the Saints, which have a bunch of old guys that you can put up. And they have to choose one of them and then four other or none. And then five total guys. And they have to be nominated. And the what makes it difficult is that they had to have played at least one snap for that team last year. So this is no old free agent signings, no pickups from training camp, no draft picks, none of that. They had to have played at least one. And trust me, we found some players that had very few snaps. And they have to have played at least one snap for their team last year. That's what made it tough.
So these are the rules that were essentially the rules that they used in 2002 when the Houston Texans came into the league. They are the most recent team to join the league via an expansion draft. I will say that if the NFL was going to do an expansion draft again, I think they would change the rules because there's just too many garbage players, I think. And for a team like the Kraken who are coming in with their pick of actually a lot of good players, I think that they would make it harder for the teams that already exist and a little bit easier for the incoming team.
Yeah, I found it very funny looking through some of your players because I think one of your players on the Broncos had three snaps last season and they were all special team snaps. So
got him in there.
and we also made some rules like no punters, no kickers, no long snappers. Yeah. There's one fullback in there, which I wasn't too pleased about, but you have to make someone.
Sometimes you want to run in 21 personnel. This isn't my fault.
maybe you'll have picked it.
Yeah. Oh, and just to make it clear, Adam chose the players who would be exposed from the NFC teams. I chose the players who would be exposed from the AFC team. So that you'll see that a little bit. And the way we're going to do it is rather than just doing it maybe like a normal draft where you just go pick one, pick two, pick three, that's a little complicated. So instead, we're just going to go position by position, picking the best players who we think would be available and worthy additions to our roster. And at first, we were going to draft against each other, but then we realized there are not enough good players to make two teams. So we are going to be drafting the same team and discussing whether picks are good, bad, all of that. And Adam, why don't you lead us off with the first pick of the draft, the most important position, quarterback?
Yeah, so this is tough with the options, with the likes of Ben DiNucci. You know, it's just some really stellar names like Garrett Gilbert. It was a tough choice, but I ended up deciding on Kyle Allen as being the only kind of suitable quarterback to that was available. Just in terms of he's had success in the past, he had some pretty solid seasons in Carolina. Not great, obviously. None of these quarterbacks are going to be great, but in terms of picking the best out of the bottom of the barrel, I'm going with Kyle Allen because at least he's shown some flashes of decency in the past.
There's a lot of players who I think we're going to be taking who are like that, where you saw like two or three games and you were like, maybe there's something here. Kyle Allen was not who I would have gone with that quarterback, actually, though. I have two options. One, who I don't think would be a long-term option by any means. And I will say, if you're going to be starting an expansion team, you'd likely get the number one overall pick and you would spend that on a quarterback. So this quarterback pick doesn't matter quite as much, I would say. You could take Nick Foles and just have him mentor your younger quarterback. That could work.
Rattler.
But if you actually want, yeah, exactly. If you actually want someone who has a little bit of upside, I wouldn't go Kyle Allen. I would go John Wolford because he's the only quarterback out of the list of quarterbacks that we made. And I'm going to put the list of exposed players in the show notes. So if you want to go see who we are picking from, you can, and maybe make your own team if you'd like. Wolford is the only quarterback who's actually a threat on the ground, which opens up the offense a little bit. And given that none of these quarterbacks are actually good, I'd rather have a quarterback that lets me have at least a little bit of a running threat.
Yeah, I don't know if you're giving enough credit to Nathan Peterman, but I see what you're saying.
I had so much fun when I put Nathan Peterman on that list.
I knew he was going to be there, and I considered taking him for the banter, but I decided against it because I wanted the ball.
Fair enough. I'll do our first running back pick, which this one was pretty easy. I can't say I'm surprised that this player's here because I think it makes sense given the way his career has gone so far, but I think he's a viable starter at running back, and that's Rashad Penny, who showed flashes for at least a three-game stretch, at least, where he was as good, if not better, than Chris Carson. And his biggest problem has really just been injuries. Since his rookie season, where he just wasn't that good, since then, he's been pretty good when he's on the field. He just hasn't been able to stay healthy. He's someone who I think has legitimate starting running back ability.
Yeah, I agree. The reason I put him on the list is because the Seahawks have been talking about maybe moving on from Rashad Penny. They're clearly not as high on him as they used to be because of injuries, because of some of his later performances. But yeah, I had Rashad Penny too, with the alternate being Josh Adams of the Jets. I'd be pretty happy with Josh Adams on my team, probably not as a starter, but he wasn't terrible last year. He had a 77.7 PFF grade, which is probably one of the higher ones out of this group of players, which shows that he's kind of efficient in when he's on the field, not necessarily when he's running the ball, but also off the ball attributes. 29 carries for 157 yards, 5.4 yards per carry. Pretty efficient. Again, I'm behind a pretty average offensive line. So I would be happy with a 6'2", 225, 24-year-old running back.
Josh Adams is fine. He doesn't do a ton for me. Even just going back to Notre Dame, he didn't do much for me.
Yeah.
The one other guy I was considering was Jordan Wilkins from the Colts, who is another one of those guys who had a few weeks where he flashed. And he did that last season, showing that he was a pretty strong, decisive runner. And when he was called upon, he was actually relatively impressive. He wasn't great as a starter, so I think he'd be better as a second running back. I would maybe take him over Josh Adams, but we're really splitting hairs at that point. So
yeah,
why don't you give us the first wide receiver?
Okay, so this might be a bit of a homer pick, but I took Christian Blake from Atlanta. this is one of the more underrated wide receivers in the NFL. Just because anyone who trains with Julio is automatically better than the average wide receiver. This is a 25-year-old wide receiver who throughout his whole career has trained in camp behind Julio, Sanu, Calvin Ridley, Russell Gage. He's been in this incredible camp of wide receivers, and that's rubbed off on him. He's been really good when he's gotten to play, especially in the preseason. And I think with the starting role, he could definitely get some good yardage, some good plays. And I think he's a pretty solid option as a wide receiver too.
He still hasn't gotten past the UVA legend Olamide Zaccheaus on the depth chart, but still, that's fine.
In his defense, Olamide Zaccheaus is a slot receiver, and he's not. So
okay, I know very little about Christian Blake. Who I was going to go with my first wide receiver pick was just pure upside, and a player who I actually don't think has that much upside, but the league used to think he did, and that's N'Keal Harry.
N'Keal Harry, yep.
Who is already has requested a trade from the Patriots. I think that they would be perfectly happy to just give him up in an expansion draft because I don't think they're going to get very much for him.
It's a very Belichick thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, he's not good. I do not think he's good. But enough people believed in his talent when he's coming into the draft, which, by the way, if you go back and you look at his college film, the issues were absolutely there. He just cannot separate to save his life. But maybe if you put him in a better environment, he becomes a
Devontae Parker.
Half of a Mike Williams. Not even a Devontae Parker, half of Mike Williams. And that's all. The wide receiver options in this pool were not great. So that's why I'm going with Harry.
Yeah, I had Harry too. Just another young guy with potential. It's very easy to find wide receivers that played one or two snaps for a team last year and just throw them up for this draft. So having N'Keal Harry, at least you have something to work with there. You have a little bit more polished potential than some of the other guys. And since both of my two other wide receivers are pretty young, I wanted to go with my third wide receiver being a little bit older, and that's Devin Funchess.
Okay.
He's played some pretty important roles in the past, especially on the Panthers. He's shown that he can be a pretty solid asset when he's used correctly. Obviously, in Green Bay, he didn't really get the shine that he got in Carolina, and it showed. But
he was just injured all season.
Right. Even when he played, he wasn't the same guy he was in Carolina. It's important to have a big receiver like that on your team. And I think that he could help lead the wide receiver room, 6'4", 225. He's still only 27, which seems really young, in my opinion.
I don't think he ever got on the field for Green Bay. I do think he was injured the entire time. So I'm just going to note that. I think that's a solid. I think that's a solid choice. I had one other younger player because I was really just betting on upside for my wide receivers and hoping one of them will stick. That's Ashton Doolin, who's 6'1". He's on the Colts, a wide receiver on the Colts. You've probably never heard of him, but he's 6'1", 215 pounds, and runs a 4.4 40. He's probably never going to be more than a deep threat, and he's just really, really raw. But I figured I'll take a chance on that upside.
Yeah, I mean, you've never heard of him, so you can't really argue with it.
Yeah. All right, I think there's two solid options at tight end here, and I think we might have the same one. So, Adam.
Yeah, I think the first one's pretty clear.
Say the obvious one.
Hayden Hurst from the Falcons.
For sure.
He was pretty solid last year. Very good in blocking, very good in receiving. Atlanta just doesn't really have room for him on the field right now. And I think that there's a good chance that they could get some value for him in a trade, obviously. But I think that if they couldn't, I could see them putting him up.
Yeah, he's still a year away from a contract, so I don't really know if he would be exposed. I think they'd be more likely to keep him, especially given the history of rookie tight ends in this league. Even as special as we think Kyle Pitts is, it's I don't know mathematically, but like given prior history, very unlikely that he'll be very good immediately. So they might want to still have him, but he's definitely at the very least a starting quality tight end, and he won't command a huge contract, so they could probably the expansion team could keep him after this season. The other tight end who I had, I'm not sure if it's the same one, is Tyler Conklin, who...
It's not the same one I had, but...
Okay, so a blocking tight end from the Vikings, useful to have a blocking tight end in general, but at the end of last season, he actually showed some pass-catching chops and was almost outperforming Irv Smith Jr. in a couple games at the end of the season, which is really disappointing to me as an Irv Smith fantasy owner, but pretty impressive given that they invested a second-round pick in Smith, and he was really good at Alabama, so... I liked what I saw there, and I thought it might be worth a flyer on him.
That's a good pick. And I also went down the blocking tight end route for this one, with one of the better blocking tight ends in the league being Derek Carrier. He's not the best catching tight end, but he had an 84 grade on PFF for blocking, which is one of the top five out of tight ends. So he doesn't play a lot, but when he does, he's one of the better blockers in out of all tight ends. So I had to put him in. Puts up solid yard per catch numbers every season. Well, obviously, as a tight end that doesn't play, kind of every tight end that doesn't get many snaps has incredibly high yards per catch, like Dan Arnold and I guess Derek Carrier.
It's only right to put Dan Arnold in the expansion draft, even if he isn't eligible. I think he should be in this anyways.
Yeah, I don't know if I would have taken him.
I would have. I don't know. I have a soft spot for him ever since he was on the Saints.
Yeah, I do want to mention one thing, though, about the rules to this draft, too. So we base this off of the Bill Barnwell ESPN article, and he mentioned that you can't take more than two players from one team. So I stuck to that, too, and that's my two Falcons out of the way.
Okay, I don't know if I follow. I didn't intentionally follow those rules, but I might have done it accidentally. I forgot about that part. Here's where it gets difficult. The offensive line, because it's really thin. Like, offensive lines are already thin enough around the league. No one wants to give up a starter.
Mm-hmm.
So, Adam, why don't you start us off with our tackles?
Okay, so at left tackle, I chose Rashad Hill from the Minnesota Vikings. Last season, he had only 121 snaps, but in those snaps, he didn't allow any sacks and he didn't commit any penalties. The one problem with him was that he got beat around the outside a lot on Dalvin Cook's runs. So his run support was pretty terrible, but he had good pass blocking. And with as a left tackle who needs to protect my Kyle Allen or Spencer Rattler, I would enjoy having Rashad Hill, 29. So he's at least got some years under his belt to protect it.
The player who I was going to go with at tackle is someone who I actually don't think would end up being exposed. I would be taking James Hurst, swing tackle from the New Orleans Saints, who I think is actually a pretty decent and reasonably efficient swing tackle. I don't know if they would expose him. He's 30 years old. So maybe a little bit older, but not terrible for a tackle. His contract is very reasonable for the next 3 years, I think, including this season. So if I'm going to have a tackle, I'm pretty happy getting him.
Yeah, my one issue with him is his age, and he's clearly been digressing the past couple of seasons. He's clearly been regressing the past couple of seasons. I don't know how fast that regression is going to be, but if he has another drop like he did last year, I don't know if the Saints will want to keep him.
Fair enough. What do you have at guard? Because we barely exposed any guards in this.
Yeah, so at left guard, it was tough, but I ended up on Tom Compton of San Francisco. The rest of the line that I picked, except for Rashad Hill, is really young. So I think that Compton would be a good veteran to have on this line. I was contemplating Whitworth from the Rams, but at the same time, he's a little too old for my liking.
He's on the team. He would probably retire if he was sent to an expansion team.
Yeah, unless it's like in his hometown or something like that. But yeah, at 32, he put up decent numbers last year with only 148 snaps. I just wanted one older guy on the line that gave up pretty much no pressures last season, but on few snaps.
So the player who I took at guard, well, I have two, but one of them was Justin Murray, who I think was in Arizona last year and has been a pretty decent two-year starter. I don't know. Again, don't know if they'd expose him just because it's so hard to get half decent offensive lineman. He's actually been a tackle, so I'm fine with playing him at tackle or moving him inside if we have the tackle position sorted out. And he did a bunch of damage in the run game his first season as a starter, and then got better as a pass blocker last year, which makes me pretty comfortable with him either at tackle or guard.
Yeah, I had him as my second right guard.
Okay.
I also liked what I saw out of Justin Murray last season. I just want to see one more year of that before I'm willing to say that he's a startable player. But he did have 600 snaps the last season, so I'd be happy having someone that's been on the line for a good amount of time on my team.
Exactly. I'd say that there's really only one option here at center who has any experience. Who is it? I think we have the same person.
Oh, I actually have two centers. So
okay. I'll say one of them. Yours. Sure. I have Max Garcia here.
Yeah.
Who has he has 2 years of starting experience at center.
Yeah.
That is much better than you're going to get pretty much anywhere else. And so I'm perfectly happy with that. Like especially if we're bringing in Spencer Rattler, I don't want to happen to him what happened to David Carr after the Texans took him, where he literally got hit out of the league because his offensive line was so terrible.
Yeah. He's the only person that started a game that's been like a consistent starter over the past couple of years. So that's a pretty obvious pick. And then I listed off some other prospects I'd consider taking, which are Joey Hunt of Indianapolis and Billy Price of Cincinnati. Billy Price, just because he's an Ohio State center.
Billy Price was a former first round pick. This is the thing.
Yeah.
I put Billy Price on the list and I almost felt bad about doing it because he was a first round pick like 3 years ago, but he was so bad that they refused to start him last year when Cincinnati had one of the worst offensive lines in the league. Like, I don't know where he can start. He's just been god awful.
I just couldn't pass up an Ohio State 25-year-old center.
Fair enough. I guess it means you're going for Pat Elflein too.
No. So my other prospect was Joey Hunt, and he just has less experience than the rest of the guys, but I think he's actually pretty talented. With another year in Indianapolis, I think he'll actually be almost starting caliber. So maybe taking a flyer on him wouldn't be too bad.
Do you have any more guards or tackles you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so I have my one more right guard and one more right tackle. My other right guard is Wes Martin of the Washington football team. Listen, I know he was terrible last year, but he had 339 snaps. He was a pretty much a starter for a good over a half of the season. Once again, having someone like that on your team is important, despite his insane amount of pressures that he allowed for a good 3 week span.
He was just really, I looked at him, he got time. He was just terrible with it.
I do think that at only 25, he has a lot of upside though. And he was pretty good at run blocking. His pass protection was god awful. And then Fred Johnson, right tackle for Cincinnati. Once again, I hate taking another Cincinnati offensive lineman, but he's only 24 and he got thrown in the deep end with a ton of experience. 491 snaps as a 24-year-old on a Cincinnati offensive line is tough. He was bad also, but having some experience is nice.
As you can see, the offensive line cupboard is barren, but as we get into the defense, it should get a little bit more interesting with more players that you guys recognize, because here is where you'll find a lot more of those vets who have just a contract that's a little bit too big for their team, and maybe they decide to move on, but they might be solid contributors. And I think that starts right here at defensive tackle, where I actually almost want to talk about this, because I put Brandon Williams up and I exposed him from the Baltimore Ravens. And I think there's a decent chance that the Ravens wouldn't expose him if this was real life, given that they have enough cap space and he's only under the books for, I think, one more season. But his contract is pretty massive, and this expansion team could definitely afford it. He's still a really good player. He's a great leader, and having a run stuffer like him is valuable in any defense. So that's why I figured he'd be a good pick. I don't really know if the Ravens would actually let him be picked.
Yeah, I have a similar thing for my defensive lineman. So I didn't choose Brandon Williams because he's 32, and I didn't really want to draft anyone that up there in age, but he's a 330-pounder, 6'1". He's a menace. Like, he's a good person to have in the trenches. But the next one is BJ Hill of the Giants, who I don't know if they'd open up, but after some of their draft picks this year, I could see it happening. At only 25, he was actually like kind of a sneakily a beast last year. He had like 21 solo tackles at defensive interior lineman, which is pretty good. And he ran a sub-5 40-yard dash, which is not something you get out of 311 pounders that nowadays. So I love his athleticism. I don't think that the Giants would necessarily let him go, but I exposed him, so I'll take it.
I have one final defensive tackle who I actually do think would probably be exposed to this point, and I would like to take. This is another guy where I'm looking back to one game that I watched where he was really, really impressive, and I think he got hurt before the end of it. This is DJ Jones from the San Francisco 49ers, who I think 2 years ago I watched him. I don't remember against who. I think it was like a Sunday Night Football game against the Seahawks or something like that. Really, really impressive, getting pressure, penetrating from the inside. I think he was replacing Solomon Thomas after Thomas got hurt, and he got hurt by the end of the game, but he was really impressive for quite a few snaps, and I think that that could be harnessed. And he's on such a stacked defensive line that he's probably not going to get any more playing time with the 49ers, so I could see him flourishing with a new team.
Yeah, my problem with DJ Jones last season was his snap counts. He was getting gassed pretty early on in the game and not playing that many snaps in the third and fourth quarters, which is, I guess it's a solvable problem. But when you're 321 and run almost a 40-yard dash, you're going to get gassed pretty quickly. I just wouldn't take him because of the length, but at the same time, it's a solid pick. And defensive line is one of those places where if you just get a bunch of 300-pounders, they'll do the job.
Yeah. Now, defensive end is a little bit trickier. I think the interior was quite a bit easier.
I have one more interior defensive line.
Oh, sorry, go for it.
And I went young again here. So both of my interior defensive linemen are 25 years old. And that's Greg Gaines from the Los Angeles Rams. Once again, choosing someone who sits next to Donald is a terrible idea, because literally all of his production comes from Aaron Donald, except for maybe some of his solo tackles. But even that's just because Aaron Donald's being double teamed.
Yeah,
I didn't even look at his two sacks because I don't even want to imagine what those were like. He has a lot. He took a lot of snaps last year. He's only 25, and he's trained with Donald, which can also be seen as a plus because he's been in the best defensive line in the NFL, arguably. So interior defensive line. So I'll give him some credit, and I'll take it.
Fair enough. I would say he apparently knows how to deal with knives now if he's trained with Donald.
He's probably the one doing the nine.
That's probably true. Defensive end, I have one player who you exposed him, and so I want to talk about that because I just don't think he would be exposed in any reasonable universe, and that's Trey Flowers, a defensive end for the Detroit Lions, formerly of the New England Patriots. I know he struggled with injuries last year, but he's only 28, and he's been extremely effective in each of the past 3 years, not including last year. His pressure percentage in each of those seasons was over 12%, and he actually got better on the Lions in his first season with them with even less help, I would say both from other players and just schematically from the coaches than he did on the Patriots. So even though his cap hit is pretty massive, and that's obviously an issue, that's a cap hit I'd be willing to take. I think that if the Lions tried to trade him, they would actually get value for him, though. Or like, not a ton, maybe like a third round pick. And I think that they'd probably do that rather than putting him up for an expansion draft.
Yeah. So what the reason I exposed Trey Flowers was because of his performance last year. His production, despite his 9 missed games of injury, was much worse than the rest of his career. I just think if you want to justify that $18 million annual salary, you got to be putting up insane numbers. And I don't think that Detroit will want to keep him financially if he's putting up that kind of statistics. He's set to carry a cap hit of $23.2 million in 2022. And this is a good chance for them to get rid of that, to not really worry about it. And Detroit's a rebuilding team and spending a lot of money on now he's making the transition to outside linebacker is not what Detroit will want to spend their money on. And I think there would be a decent chance that he actually did get exposed.
I could definitely see him moving on from Detroit, especially because the Bob Quinn and Matt Patricia regime that was, you know, sort of the whole Patriots North thing that brought him in is gone. That would make sense to me. I don't think that they wouldn't be able to trade him. That's all I'll say. But anyways, if he's available, I'm taking him. I absolutely want him on my team.
That's fair. If someone of that caliber and you have the cap to do so is available, I don't see why you wouldn't. I just don't think that the Lions would keep him on board because it doesn't really fit with what they're doing.
Yeah. Do you have any other defensive ends that you would want to take?
Yeah. So I have one, the guy that I'm a big fan of, especially out of college. So this is a Houston Cougar guy, Cameron Malveaux. He is 6'5", 265 pounds off the Cleveland Browns. And I think on any other team, this guy gets good snap counts every game, has good production. But this man only played like 18 snaps last year because the Cleveland Browns are just so stacked.
But were they last year? They were starting Adrian Claiborne for like the entire second half of the season.
Right. So he's also very young. So yeah, he needs to develop for sure. And he does play exactly where the same style that Myles Garrett plays. So having 2 Myles Garrett would be nice, but he didn't really have the polishness that Myles has, obviously. But I think that this is a name that you should remember because I think he'll make waves in the NFL in a couple of years. I remember watching him in Houston and he was insane. And now he just has to make that transition and it's taking him a little bit. He was drafted in 2017, but I think if I wanted upside, this is where I go because he had a pretty good production and only 18 snaps.
All right. I'm glad you like him. I did not think much about exposing him. Don't know much about him. But I guess you're selling me on him. I will trust in Cameron Malveaux, even if you won't get any shot this season.
Perfect.
Linebacker is also tricky. There was a lot of guys who could be exposed. Just very few of them were good.
None of them can cover. None of them can cover anything.
So I decided to go with a risk here. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I'm going to take more veterans because I think we have the cap space. I'm going to take CJ Mosley, who I think it's very, very reasonable for the Jets to expose him. He hasn't played in 2 years. I think he hasn't played essentially for the Jets at all because it was even the 2 years since he signed. I think they're just ready to clear him off their books. I mean, the regime that is currently in place isn't the one that brought him in anyways. I think it would make a ton of sense for them to move on. And he's only 29. Like, I think it would be fine. He literally just turned 29 in June. So he's not that old. I think it'd be reasonable to bring him on. I will say, though, that his contract gets pretty big next year. I think it's around $17.5 million. So they probably need to come to an agreement on a pay cut before they would draft him.
Yeah, he's a big cap hit for the Jets, who are a pretty young team. So I think there's a good chance that they let him go. I think he'd be a good jaguar or whatever we decide to name our team.
He could be an orca too.
Yeah. He's a good captain to have on defense. Like, he definitely gets that team. So I can see where you're coming with this. I went a little bit different direction. I went all youth here because there's really no one that we made available that has kind of any talent. So the first guy is like a special team hybrid for Houston, and that's Nate Hall. He kind of played everywhere on the field last year with a PFF grade of 86. So whatever he was doing was effective. He had sacks, forced fumbles, tackles for loss, tackles on special teams. I like a guy that can do anything, and I'll just throw him in at linebacker and say, hey, do you.
Look, if I'm going to choose a green, okay, you know what? I don't know much about Nate Hall. That sounds good by me. I'm just saying if I'm going to choose a green dot, I would want him to be a vet. Or if I'm going to put the green dot on a linebacker, which for those of you who don't know, the green dot is the position or the one player on defense who has a radio headset in his helmet and is able to communicate with the coaches. I'm giving that to CJ Mosley. But I do think getting some youth there and just seeing if any of them pan out is a good idea.
Yeah.
You have another one?
Yeah, I have two other linebackers. Okay. So I wanted both the Halls. So I took Terrez Hall.
No, you didn't take Terrez Hall. Oh, he's so bad. He was so terrible last year.
He's so bad, but his last name's Hall. And I wanted both of them.
I guess we need to bring Alex Hall in to discuss this.
To be fair, maybe we'll draft Bryce Hall if you made him available. No, the Jets are not doing that. But yeah, in his defense, he's only 24. He has a lot of snaps under his belt. He learned in the Belichick system, which is obviously always a good way to get players. He had 50 tackles. It was his rookie year. Cut him a break. He's only 24.
That's fine. He was in a tough position. I mean, like, Dont'a Hightower wasn't there. He was just so bad last year. I couldn't take him. I didn't consider it. I didn't expose Jawan Bentley, but I wouldn't have taken him either, even though they both got a ton of snaps. They were just so bad. I just didn't want them on my team. Who's your last linebacker?
My last one, because I hadn't chosen anyone from Carolina and I wanted them to get involved, was Marquise Haynes.
Okay.
He was terrible in man coverage last year, but pretty good all around besides that, which is a pretty bad thing to be bad at as a linebacker. But if we're looking for someone that's going to get that's going to play both on the defensive line and in zone coverage, then Marquise Haynes can do that. 4.67 speed, 10 solo tackles, 4 sacks, and a forced fumble in very, very limited snaps on a defense that was very young and very led. Like, they weren't led by any star players on defense. I am worried about pass defense in this linebacker core because none of them can do it. So I was contemplating Ataro Alaka from the Ravens because he was a very good pass coverage linebacker in college, but he was terrible for the Ravens. So I'm gonna keep my three and be very disappointed.
Yeah, you just sort of need to hope that this team does not run into Kyle Shanahan, because Kyle Shanahan would just massacre these linebackers, just absolutely murder them.
Or pretty much any NFL coach.
Yeah, but that's sort of Shanahan's specialty.
Yeah, I'd rather run into Gase than Shanahan.
You want to do any linebacker discourse about Fred Warner's new contract?
Sure, let's do it.
He's really good. They should pay him. I have nothing more to say.
He's pretty good. I'd keep him.
Yeah, he's the best. I would say either him or Eric Kendricks is the best coverage linebacker in the league. If you don't want to pay a linebacker, it's because you don't think that they're that valuable in coverage, and coverage is more important than run stuffing, which is why you used to pay linebackers. That argument does not apply with Warner, because he's just outrageously good and can easily cover number threes up the seam. Well, not maybe easily, but very, very few linebackers in the league can still do that. And that's why you pay him. That's basically all I really have to say.
It's funny seeing the people like compare him to Jalen Smith. they're both linebackers. Therefore, they do the same thing. Why would you pay him?
Yeah, Zach Cunningham's contract was bad, so Fred Warner's will be bad. Well, exactly. No, Zach Cunningham can't cover to save his life. There's a reason his contract isn't good.
But he had 140 tackles.
Oh, my God. That's all your linebacker discourse for the day. Adam, take us to the cornerbacks, where, these are also bad options.
This was definitely the spot that I learned the most about irrelevant players from, because I looked into all of these cornerbacks, and I was struggling. So I think we can start this off with the Darius Slay conversation, because he's kind of the only guy that I'd be comfortable with starting despite his not poor but mediocre performance last year, for not nearly for what he's being paid. His 3 years, $50 million contract is way too much for what he's doing for that team. They gave up a ton for him, and he's just not the same player that he was. He's on a decline. I could totally see the Eagles trying to get out of the cap hit of $22.3 million in dead cap. it's not someone that I would want to keep if I'm Philly, but it would be someone that I'd be looking for as a young team trying to get at least one corner.
Philly's cornerback room is just so bad that I feel like they sort of have to keep him and just hope that he figures it out. Because, yeah, last year was definitely below his standards. But at this point, you might as well. Like, there's so few good cornerbacks in the league at this point. Or just there aren't enough good starters to go around or decent starters to go around. So you just sort of keep Darius Slay. But I think that if you're an expansion team who doesn't have the cap issues that a team like Philly does because your books are literally blank, then I think it makes sense to take a shot on him. Maybe hope that he helps your other corner, your younger cornerbacks develop. And at the very least, you have someone who can at least have covered number ones in the past, even if he probably shouldn't be doing that anymore.
Yeah.
I think that on this team, assuming we're taking Darius Slay, it would probably be a good idea to use the Deion principle. And I don't know how well it would work, but the Deion principle is when you have your top cornerback cover the other team's number two wide receiver and you double team the number one wide receiver, because that way you just expect your number one cornerback to shut down the number two wide receiver. And I don't really know if Darius Slay can even do that anymore, but I think it would be much better than just putting him on number ones. And so that's something that you see Bill Belichick do a lot, even with star cornerbacks like Stephon Gilmore. I think this would be a very, very good time to use it.
Yeah. I just wanted Slay as kind of like almost to act as a mentor from my other cornerbacks, because none of the other ones were like at all experienced or way too experienced. And so I went on the opposite end of the spectrum for my other picks. Who else did you have at cornerback?
I only had Darius. I mean, like, seriously, okay. Guys, these guys suck. So tell me what you learned and like who you're comfortable taking.
So I did a lot of research for this episode. So my next cornerback is Duke Dawson Jr. of the Denver Broncos.
Oh, okay. He's worth a shot. Yeah.
And I remember watching him at Florida with the Florida Gators. He was a really solid cornerback, but he had an ACL injury, so you never really know. But coming, like, he had 4.4 speed. He hasn't really been healthy throughout his whole career, so he has nothing but upside. He's very young. If you want a fast corner that even if he plays like a shadow of his former self in college, I think he'll be a startable cornerback. So I'd take Duke Dawson and be pretty happy about it. He was a former second round pick, I want to say.
Yeah, I think you're betting on talent here. But the thing is, like, the Patriots gave up on him for like a seventh round pick. Like, they were done with him.
Yeah.
And
in his defense, he didn't get one snap as a starter for the Patriots.
Yes.
So it's really just basing on potential. And if I want to like a body that I can put at cornerback, it would be Duke Dawson just because of what he could do.
No, given the other cornerbacks, I think I honestly forgot about Duke Dawson, even though I put him on the list. I will take the second round pick out of those guys and just hope he works out or shows a little bit of the reason that he was drafted in the second round.
Yep. So once again, I went full potential on this next one from the Los Angeles Chargers, John Brennan III. You know, he's irrelevant when his date of birth is not even on Pro Football Focus. But that guy was hard to research.
I had to look around like three times to make sure he actually existed.
He had 5 snaps last year. So this is practically like drafting a rookie, because last year was his rookie year. So I went back and I watched his college footage for Western Carolina. And this dude was locked down. Once again, no competition. But this dude did not get one pass completed on him pretty much the entire season. And he had records. He's pretty much broken every defensive record for Western Carolina. 56 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, a sack, 8 interceptions, and 13 pass breakups in like 2 games. So he's kind of insane. But he also had offensive stats for Western Carolina. And that's what really brought me in. Because this dude is quick. He has a potential. He has good hands. He caught 24 passes his senior year for 98 yards and 3 touchdowns. I want someone with potential that's played both sides of the ball. Give me John Brennan III.
Why not? Okay. Unless you have someone who you really want to talk about, cornerback, I'll move us to safety.
No, that those are my 3.
Okay, sounds good. Because at safety, the
disgusting double team of Brennan III and Dawson Jr.
Jesus Christ. At safety, I went older because there were two veterans who I thought were actually worth taking. One is Landon Collins, who I think was a pretty reasonable player for to be exposed, given that Cam Curl did a really, really good job, even though he was a seventh round pick, taking over his role when Collins was hurt for most of last year. I will say he's been on a downward trajectory since his sophomore season, but he's only 27 and he isn't bad. He's just more of a box safety. I'd be fine having him on my team. Like he's not too old. And if he can stay healthy, he's at least going to be a decent contributor, even if his contract is probably too big.
Yeah, I put him up because of his contract. I didn't take him either because of his contract. And I had another safety that I was looking at that I preferred, but he's a pretty good strong safety if that's what you're looking for on your team.
Which other safeties did you take then?
So at strong safety, this is actually probably one of my favorite picks that I put up because I think that it's very likely that Mike Edwards of Tampa Bay gets put up because of how well Antoine Winfield played last year at strong safety. And for the few amount of snaps that he played, he was incredible when he was on the field. He had a 77 grade on PFF, if I remember correctly. He was super effective on the ball and off the ball. He had two interceptions and only allowed three catches out of his eight catchable balls that he faced. So he was pretty locked down. And he had two interceptions and eight tackles and very few snaps. So when he was on the field, he would make his presence known. And I think if he got his starting position, he would be a startable strong safety. I think he could be one of the decent strong safeties in the NFL. It just sucks that he's stuck behind such a good prospect in Antoine Winfield.
For my other safety, I went also really old, even older than Landon Collins. I don't even know if it's worth drafting him on an expansion team, but I did it purely for the veteran presence. I drafted Rodney McLeod.
Yeah, McLeod, I think.
Is it McLeod?
I think so.
I don't think so. I have no idea. Anyways.
I'm pretty sure it's Rodney McLeod.
Okay. He was actually really good last year. I did not expect that at all, but I was looking into his numbers and he was actually really impressive in coverage. Last season, he allowed a 41% completion percentage, 4.1 yards per target. He had 66 tackles. Actually pretty solid. I did not think he'd been that good at all until I took a deep dive into his numbers. So someone who, even though he's already 31, I would be happy to have on my team.
Yeah. The reason I put up, the reason that I had McLeod like available to be picked is because looking at the depth chart, he is currently third out of the strong safety or sorry, fourth, third on out of three safeties available. And also I didn't want a 31-year-old on my team.
Well, and he's also a 31-year-old on the Eagles. Like it makes perfect sense for them to expose him.
Yeah. I totally get that, but I went pretty much this entire draft. I went the opposite end of the spectrum. My oldest guy, I have one 32-year-old and then no one else over 30. So I have Brandon Rusnak of the Jacksonville Jaguars as my free safety. Once again, going on potential here. 26-year-old safety, 19 tackles, decent coverage. I like him because of how well he played at Michigan. I haven't really watched him in the NFL, so I can't really talk too much on that. But I think he has a lot of potential and he could turn around his career with a couple more snaps with a better coaching system around.
Okay, so that's a roster. Apparently, that we just put together. Before we close this episode out, I do think it might be worth talking about a few of the veteran players who we put up or exposed and that we didn't end up taking. I think the most obvious example is Frank Clark from Kansas City, yep. Who I'm sure that they are just begging anyone to take, but no one's going to. I think that there's never even in consideration, even if he's probably the best defensive end on the board. Well, actually, no, other than Trey Flowers, second best. Not touching him at that $25 million mark. But there was a few that I put up that I thought might be interesting and maybe a little debatable. Joe Hayden from the Steelers. Now, their cornerback room might be their weakest spot already because they're pretty, pretty weak at their second cornerback slot. They're currently counting on Justin Lane. And Joe Hayden hasn't been as good in recent years, but he's still probably a semi-viable starter. But his cap hit is pretty big and he's getting up there in age. So I thought it might make sense to move on. Now, for a team that's trying to win now, I don't think they'd probably actually expose him. But what do you think?
Oh, I just think Joe Hayden played terribly last year. He really wasn't starter caliber, but he got starter snaps just because of the voice that he is on that defense. It's so tough. Hold on. Let me look up his PFF grade last year, because there's no way it was above 50. He was bad. I don't think that they would let him go just because of how much of a voice. It was a 66 in his defense, but I don't think they let him go just because of how much of a presence he is. But I'd stay away from him as well. I also put up some veterans that I guess you could kind of say are a little arguable. Not really, though, because neither of us picked them. But Jordan Phillips of the Arizona Cardinals and Dante Fowler of the Atlanta Falcons.
Sorry, I was going to say that the Phillips one was like the most obviously terrible contract the moment that he signed it.
Yeah.
Because I don't have the exact numbers in front of me because my computer isn't really working right now. But if you look at the number of knockdowns he had to sacks the year that he had his big breakout year that got him the big contract with the Cardinals, it was very, very clear that that year is an aberration. And a bunch of his sacks were like cleanups that were mostly generated by coverage anyways. It was so obvious that that was not going to work, and it definitely didn't.
Yeah. Just when you're making a contract like that, look at the number on his jersey. You never want to sign a guy who's number 97 because they never pan out. Like it's always like the bigger defensive end that never gets to the quarterback that had one good season. I don't like this pick. I don't like this player, and I don't think that he would be picked in any expansion draft, especially with that contract. And then Dante Fowler, similar issue.
Yeah, he's just bad. Yeah, that makes sense.
Way overpaid.
Yeah, you would know. All right, so that does it for this expansion draft. Sorry it was late, but I do hope you guys enjoyed it. We just wanted to make sure that we did our research. Adam especially went way deep on all these young players, so shouts to him.
I'm going to be cheering them on throughout the season now.
See, now you know who these guys are, who I did not. A little bit of housekeeping. So as we approach season, we also approach Adam and I leaving for college. So we are going to be wrapping up Tackling the NFL in the next few weeks, at least on a week-to-week basis. So we won't be in your feeds every Thursday. We do hope, at least on a couple occasions, after an interesting game or an interesting week, we will obviously have thoughts. And so we're going to hope to record some episodes and still put them out there, but it definitely won't be with any consistency. So just wanted to give you guys a heads up. We have at least two more really good episodes in the works before that. So I hope you guys enjoyed this one, and I hope you guys enjoyed those. We've had a great time doing all of this.
Yep. Hey, let us know if you have any questions, any recommendations for the next 2 weeks. We're all ears. So thank you for listening. If you made it to the end, you must really be a football fan. So,
yeah.
So see you next week.